is Bad Boys and Beyond with your hosts, Mike Payton and Keith Black Trudeau.
That's it, baby, I'm foul.
Hey, I'll put it in the front page, back page, middle page, wherever headliners, column one or two, we will win game two. Good back it off, we will win game two.
The game's over and the Pistons have won the world championship.
Welcome back to Bad Boys and Beyond. We are your hosts, Mike Payton and Keith Black Trudeau. We've got another awesome guest today. We're really excited to have this guy in today. Detroit News' own Mike Curtis, the Pistons beat writer there. Mike, thanks for joining us today. We're happy to have you, man.
No, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to our little game a little bit later, redrafting the 2016 draft class. I got my picks ready. I got backups just in case y'all try to take my selections, but no, I'm happy to be here, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. And there you go. That's what we're covering today. The 2016 NBA draft. Can't wait to get into it. This is going to be a really interesting draft because as I was talking to both these guys off air, there's like four guys that could be the number one pick. I have to make that number one pick. I think I know what I'm going to do, but we'll see when we get to that. But Mike, real quick, you used to work at the Tennessean. Were you covering the Grizzlies over there or were you something else?
Yeah, so I interned at the Tennessean. I want to say this was 2018. Actually, it was 2016 through 18, but in different roles. But I was working part-time and I was covering high school football. So I wasn't quite yet at the pro level, but I was there for maybe a month or so until I got my job in Syracuse, New York. So I started out covering high schools there and eventually went to cover Syracuse basketball, Syracuse football, and women's basketball. And yeah, that's how I got here.
Man, been all over the place. Where are you originally from, Mike?
Yeah, originally from Saginaw, Michigan.
Okay.
Spent, I want to say, 10 years there until I graduated and went to Tennessee. Went to Tennessee State University for undergrad.
Oh, nice. All right. Yeah. I used to live out there. That's why I asked about it. I lived in Memphis, though. So I thought maybe there was a chance you covered the Grizzlies or something like that. But
No. I know a couple people that do, though. They do really good work down here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, let's get into some. I want to talk a little bit of current Pistons stuff. First, we'll start it off with Brendan Malone. Former assistant coach for the Pistons passed away this week. And Keith, I mean, I'm sure you have many things to say, so I'm just going to give the floor to you.
It's interesting because one of the consequences of being a consistent championship contender is it's just the NBA is just like the NFL. Your assistant coaches will get poached. And that's kind of what happened to the Pistons in the late 1980s. You had Ron Rothstein getting poached by the Miami Heat. You had what was it? And anyway, Chuck Daly lost two assistants. I don't know why I'm not remembering the second one, but he lost two assistants in the span of like 3 or 4 months. So they brought in Brendan Malone and Brendan Sir. And Brendan Malone was kind of the – I don't want to say he was the entire architect behind the Jordan Rules defense, but he was one of the masterminds behind it. He was the Chuck Daly's defensive guy. And he proved it later on himself as a head coach. He certainly proved himself later on in the NBA as a head coach. But Brendan Malone is a guy that anyone that's ever played for him swears by. I know Isaiah, ironically, because there's video of Isaiah Thomas choking Brendan Malone. But that was because that was after I think that was after Karl Malone elbowed him in the face. It was either him or Bill Cartwright, but it was at Isaiah was kind of out of it, so he was so upset. Brendan Malone's the guy closest to him. He winds up choking Brendan Malone. It was more of a funny moment than anything. But I think it's just great that he got to see his son coach the Denver Nuggets to an NBA championship. And look, I'm sure the entire coaching fraternity is in mourning right now because he was one of the icons of his generation. For a career assistant, he made a tremendous impact on the NBA.
For sure. Yeah. He's it's sad to see him go. And at least he got to see his son, Mike Malone, win a championship this year.
Yeah. Dick Versace. That it just came to me. Dick Versace. That was the other assistant. Yeah. The Pistons actually got a draft pick and compensation. The Indiana Pacers took him to be their head coach in the late 80s.
Or as I like to call him, Dick Versace, because it's spelled exactly the same way.
Yeah.
But the Pistons preseason started last week, and they've got another game coming up tonight. If you're listening to this on Thursday, they're going to play the Thunder tonight. Mike, I mean, you're sitting in there with the team, and I got to start here because I know if I don't, Pistons fans are going to be upset about it. Why is Jaden Ivey not in the starting lineup?
Oh,
cool.
Pistons Twitter.
Yeah.
I think right now Monty Williams is literally taking a look at every aspect of his group, assessing all options. I mean, he's kind of behind the eight ball a little bit just because you got a few guys that are hurt. You don't have Isaiah Livers. You don't have Monte Morris, who's dealing with a lower back. You don't have Bogey. And Durin just suffered a recent ankle injury. Not sure if he's going to play tonight or not yet, but I think Monty's literally just taking what he has and using different lineups. He hasn't said that for sure that Ivy's going to be coming off the bench. But I think it was an opportunity for him to put Alec Burks in to serve as that, I guess, veteran presence and that veteran shooter. Among that first unit, because if you're going to put Asar Thompson in, you're doing it because he has the ability to play both ends of the floor, play on the perimeter, specifically defensively, and he can play make a little bit. So you kind of already have that when you have Jaden Ivey out in the starting lineup. And I guess in order to kind of get the best balance from a shooting perspective, you would slide Alec Burks into that role instead of Ivey. And of course, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, this sounds exactly like what I go through with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. It's the same exact complaint. I feel for you, Mike. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. And you, it's preseason, everybody. Like nothing is set in stone. Like even when Monty was asked about why he decided to insert Jalen Durin as the starter for last game. I mean, he pretty much said like he has the ability to do things that a lot of bigs can't do. He's versatile. He's a really good rebounder. He can defend, but he has potential to grow from a defensive standpoint. He's very agile, very athletic. So I think it's just natural for him to be that starting five. And you have to take your pick whether you're going to bring Bagley or Wiseman off the bench. They're duking it out right now in a training camp battle for that backup spot. But I think everything is fluid right now. And if Monty wants to put Jaden Ivey into the starting lineup tomorrow, he very much so can. I don't think you can take a lot from the first preseason game of the season. We'll see what happens tonight against the Thunder and then in the second game against the Thunder and then finally to conclude the preseason with the Dallas Mavericks. But Monty said he hasn't had any conversations with anyone about their role. And once they get some guys back healthy, once they get closer to the regular season, that's when those conversations will take place.
All right. So Mike, you're closer. Obviously you're closer to the team that you have more access than I do. So all I can do is observe, but in my opinion, if you asked anybody who the worst defender, a perimeter defender, was on the team last season, you get one or two answers. You either get a Bojan or you'll get Jaden Ivey. And if you ask who made the most mistakes, it was probably going to be Jaden Ivey. When Bojan got beat, it's just because he was too physically slow to do anything about it. Right. Ivey, a lot of last season, I thought he looked lost. Now, the thing is, he worked himself into a fantastic offensive player. I thought he grew as a shooter more than any of us even expected him to. But the defense, I don't think, improved much. So in my opinion, I don't think that Jaden Ivey is coming off the bench if Jaden Ivey has the trust of the coach defensively. I think that's the same reason why he put Hassar Thompson into the starting lineup. Now, like you said, it's just preseason. He could change his mind the next day and decide to start Jaden Ivey. I think this is his way of trying to set a defensive tone. I remember the Monty. There was a tweet Monty talked about yesterday that Cade was taking leadership, picking up full court in practice. Like that's something you only mention if you're trying to set that kind of a tone, right, that you want the team to be about defense first. And I know people aren't going to like it because everyone, including myself, envisioned Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey being the starting backcourt of the future for the next, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. And that may very well be the case. It's only preseason. But to me, this has as much to do about Monty Williams trying to feel his roster out as it does Jaden Ivey needs to apply himself a little bit more on the defensive end of the floor. Now, it's not like he's not going to play. He's going to play big minutes regardless. But if he doesn't have the trust of the coach to do his job when they need to stop, he's not going to be in the starting lineup, and he might not play in crunch time. That's just how it's going to be going forward until we see some changes there. I'm not trying to say Jaden Ivey is on his way out or anything. I'm just saying that's kind of where he is right now, and that is the biggest area of improvement for him, needs to be on the defensive end of the floor. Offensively, I have really no complaints about anything that he's doing, and I thought he was really good in the first preseason game.
Yeah, I think the Pistons definitely are enforcing and reiterating every chance they get that defense is the focus this season, specifically under this new era of Monty Williams. That's why they drafted Hassar Thompson. They wanted a guy who could come in and do it on both ends of the floor. They really admire his length, his athleticism, and just how he's able to kind of just change the entire game. And I think when you have a talent like that, you got to put that player through as many reps as you can. So I think that's also why Hassar got the start, and not just because of his defense, but because all the things he brings from both ends of the floor. And I think he wasn't supposed to play as much as he did. Monty Williams even admitted that. But I think this preseason is definitely just about getting guys as many reps as they can. And I think for Ivy, I think if he's gonna, I guess, show that he deserves to belong in that starting lineup, I think he'll step up to the plate. We've all talked about like his relentless work ethic. And I think that's an area that he spent a lot of time on this offseason as well. So it's just he just has to – we just have to see it, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Hassar Thompson, I can already tell. Again, it's preseason. You don't want to read anything into – because things change immediately when the regular season starts. Guys, all of a sudden, they start playing better when the games matter. Or when the bright lights turn on, they shrink. Hassar Thompson is the type of guy that he just will not let you take him off the floor. Like, even in a preseason game, like, there's certain guys, like, you can tell right away their compete level is so high that coaches don't want to take them out because they don't want the intensity level on the floor to drop. And you could tell in the first preseason game that was already Hassar Thompson's that was already his thing. Is he gets onto the floor, he plays for keeps. He doesn't take a playoff. And that's, as someone that has been looking for that for the Pistons for forever, they haven't had too many guys like that. Isaiah Stewart, you know, for all of his deficiencies, is another guy like that, which is probably why Monty Williams loves him so much. But it's just a matter of getting enough guys on the floor that have that intensity level, they have that motor, that want to compete every night. I think that's what Monty wants going forward for his team.
I can't wait to find out. Just 3 more preseason games and then we're on to the regular season, man. Here we go. Hopefully it's not going to be as bad as it was last year, but we're going to see. Before we get to the draft, one last question for Mike on the current Pistons. What are your thoughts on those city jerseys?
Which city jerseys?
The black ones with the red pin stripe up the whatever is happening with that.
So I've seen what's being.
Oh, that's right. They're not official yet.
Yeah, nothing is official right now. I've seen what's being leaked, and I mean, yeah. So Nike's putting out new jerseys every year. I'm of the ilk that you got to stick with, like, you. How can I say this? I like the new jerseys. I like the aspects. I like the city themes. I think last year's St. Cecilia jersey was really, really special considering like the historical aspect of it. Yeah. And from what's being shown for the new one, I like the direction it's going. I'll say that just because it kind of pays homage to, you see people wearing these shirts all the time. I'm not going to say anything about it because if you know, you know. Right. But you see people wear these shirts all the time, the black ones, the white ones. And I think it kind of pays homage to what that era was in the past. But I like them. I like them. I'll say I like them.
All right. I don't know what you're talking about because they're not official yet. So I don't know what you like. I'm sorry, Mike. I didn't even think about the fact that they weren't official yet. So my bad for putting you in that spot.
No, it's all good.
But all right, let's stop making Mike feel uncomfortable. Let's get into the 2016 NBA draft. Keith, what are your news and notes on this draft?
I just have one. This is the very first NBA draft in all of the drafts that had taken place since 1985 that the lottery had absolutely no impact. The worst three teams in the league landed the top three picks in order of how bad they were. So this is the very, I don't know if there's been a draft since then either that's gone like this, but this is basically the lottery had no impact whatsoever. Nobody moved up, nobody moved down. Everybody stayed exactly where they were.
Wow. Yeah, that's insane because that's never going to happen again probably. And as we know, there's a lot more trades than there was last week when we had no trades. We had somehow no trades at all in the lottery last week.
Fiscal responsibility.
Insane to us. But all right. Well, I'll get her started then. The Philadelphia 76ers are on the board with the first pick, and I have the first pick, so I'm going to be making it.
Okay.
We talked about how difficult this might be because there's like I said, there's like four guys that could be the number one pick, but I think I know who I'm going to go with. And here's why. I'm looking at the current roster and we just got Joel Embiid last year. We got Jeremy Grant at power forward. This team needs a point guard or shooting guard. They need somebody in the backcourt. You know, Harden's not here yet, and Ben Simmons is a route that we could go, but we know what's going to happen when we eventually go that route.
But Mike, the player that got picked here originally was the guy they traded for James Harden. So I don't know if James Harden is coming regardless.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good point. I'm going to prevent it from happening anyways, because I'm going to take Jaylen Brown.
Okay.
With my number one pick. And I know that Jaylen has some things that he still needs to work on. Like there's some little shooting stuff that and it's like a little thing, but like when this guy gets it, he gets it. And I think that him and Jason Tatum are a very good duo together. And I think that he and Joel Embiid could complement each other really nicely. And I think that you're going to build a better and stronger team than you would have with Ben Simmons or then trading for James Harden, who is now, you know, arguing with the team in public every 5 minutes. So I'm going to go with Jaylen Brown. I think that's the best way to go. But again, I wasn't super 100% sure that this was the best pick.
Yeah, it's kind of funny for a guy that is arguably not even the most dominant player in his own team, a guy that everybody makes fun of because he has no left hand. The fact that I also have him number one on my board and I'm very comfortable with it says volumes about what he does bring to the table. And there's a reason why the Celtics paid him all that money to come back and be their number two guy. Jaylen Brown, and this is one that you have to give Danny Ainge a whole lot of credit for, because Jaylen Brown was the top prospect on nobody's board in this going into this draft. I mean, he was a prospect. He was seen as a high potential guy, but no one had him in the top like three or four, I don't think, at least not that I recall. And yeah, he wound up going third in the actual draft, and a lot of people dinged the Celtics for it, but no, it was absolutely the right pick. It was the best, to me, it was one of the best picks in the entire draft. How does he affect the Sixers going forward? I mean, Jaylen Brown and Joel Embiid, in all honesty, has Joel Embiid had anybody, I guess Jimmy Butler for half a season, but has he really had anybody as good, a two-way player as good as Jaylen Brown next to him? I don't think he has.
Yeah, it's funny y'all picked Jaylen Brown, because that was going to be my pick had Jaylen Brown slipped to number two. Yeah, like you said, all NBA talent. He's one of six All-Stars in this draft. I think he would have been a great fit in Philly next to Joel Embiid, especially when you see the trajectory, of how their careers have gone. I think he would be that too that Joel kind of needs right now to get over that hump to get to ultimately get to the NBA Finals. So I definitely agree about having Jaylen Brown as number one.
I mean, Jimmy Butler could have been that guy for him too, but they decided to keep Tobias Harris instead. But yeah, we're not talking about that today. All right, so selecting number two in our redraft order is going to be our guest, Mike Curtis. On behalf of the Los Angeles Lakers, I believe this was Kobe Wells' farewell season, right?
It was Kobe Wells' farewell season.
R.I.P. Kobe. So yeah, they're very much a train wreck at this point. I think, do they even have D'Angelo Russell anymore? I think they traded this offseason.
They do.
Okay, so did they? Damn, I wish I was looking at the roster. They have Julius Randle.
Yep.
Okay.
So they have Julius, Jr.
Yep. So they have Julius Randle. I think he missed the last most of his rookie season because he was hurt. And they have older Kobe. But yeah, this team is not going anywhere for a little bit. So you kind of have room to play around here. There's really no need to fill. You can just pick the best guy.
So this was 16-17, right?
Yeah, going into the 16-17 season, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the year Kobe retired, right? He retired in 16?
Well, I'm saying, I think, didn't he retire? That's what I'm saying. Did Kobe...
Yeah, for this... For the roster I'm looking at, for the 16-17 roster.
Okay, Kobe. So no, he retired in 16, so he's gone. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's Kobe gone. Is retired at this point. Yeah, I've just pulled up the roster. So yeah, we still got Julius Randle. D'Angelo Russell's there for a minute. How is Ron Artest still in the NBA at this point?
Meta world piece.
And Luol Deng is still stealing money. And we have Lou Williams, who is like the eighth guy I mentioned, and he's probably the best player in the whole team. Okay, yep. So who do you have for us?
So Jaylen Brown would have been my selection to kind of like assume the role of that starting shooting guard spot. But when you got a team that has D'Angelo Russell, you got Julius Randle, and you got Larry Nance Jr., you know, those were... That was kind of the new core that they were building under. They originally selected Brandon Ingram. I think I'm going to go into a different direction and select Pascal Siakam.
Ooh.
Oh, that's interesting. what do you got? What's your take on that?
I think just because when you got a guy who can play both ends of the floor, we know length is really important in this league, and we see what Pascal has become as far as like his all-star potential. Of course, he was playing next to Kawhi Leonard, playing next to Fred VanVleet, but I think when he's on a team that has other complementary pieces, he's able to play really well. And I think Pascal could fit in with these young Lakers, because when you have D'Angelo Russell, a guy who's offensively minded, he's not your traditional point guard, he's going to get his shot. You got Julius Randle, who is posed to be the next big power forward in LA, and you know the majority of these guys were traded ultimately for what became Anthony Davis. So I'm gonna go Pascal. I wanted to stay Pat and select Ingram, but I decided I would kind of switch it up last minute.
All right. So here's my question for you. Are in your mind, are you drafting for the Lakers here, or are you drafting for the Pelicans? Because do you think that if you – no, I'm serious. Do you think that if, by switching out Brandon Ingram for Pascal Siakam, do you think that's going to – that could possibly change things? Do you think the Lakers would be any more hesitant to give him up for Anthony Davis?
No. Actually, okay. I think they would have been – probably more prone to pull the trigger earlier on.
Okay. Now, I was just curious about your thought process. That's all.
Yeah.
No, but you know, I agree with you. Actually, I don't. I think in this scenario, Pascal Siakam ends up in New Orleans instead of Brandon Ingram. All right. So up next, it's a historic top three right there: Sixers, Lakers, and now the Boston Celtics.
Yeah,
all of the legacy franchises. All right, so the Celtics, they're about to hit their renaissance right now, and the crazy part is they don't even have their franchise pieces yet. They don't have Tatum yet, and this is the Jaylen Brown draft, which they're not going to get Jaylen Brown. But I'll tell you what, going on the assumption that they're going to still get Tatum down the road, I am going to give Tatum something he hasn't really had in his career, and that is a ball-dominant combo guard. Like an actual – like he's got good guards. The Celtics have always had good guards, don't get me wrong, even with Isaiah Thomas. But I mean like a legitimate, like, possible star-type guard. Out of Kentucky, the Celtics draft Jamal Murray.
That's exactly how I had it too. That's I was.
And
I was
look, also this is not this is not easy to take him over Ingram, because I think Ingram and Tatum is also really tantalizing, because Ingram brings a lot to the table offensively that Jaylen Brown doesn't. But to me, the Celtics have always had this kind of imbalance where their offense is funneled so much through their wings and a little bit through their bigs, and their guards are kind of there, like they're productive, but they're. To me, I think the Celtics need like a really good guard. I think that's where Jrue Holiday is going to really come into play for them this season. Like, he could be the final piece. I'm going to try to give them the final piece up front. Jamal Murray, what can you say about the guy? He did not have a great year with Kentucky. He kind of got drafted based on, you know, who he was, his potential. And he started a little bit slow with Denver. People weren't quite sure if he was going to work out in the league. And not only has he worked out, he's dominated. You can take away from that performance in the bubble in the 2020 playoffs, where he had the back-to-back 50-point games. But you know what he did this past postseason in the playoffs, where he was just the perfect tag team partner for Nikola Jokic. No one could really stop those two, and it wasn't all Jokic. You saw last year, without Jamal Murray, Jokic was the same MVP caliber player, and they got knocked out in the first round in five games. They needed Jamal Murray. So I'm really liking the idea of putting Murray in tandem with Jason Tatum and seeing how that develops. All right. The number four pick, and we're going to circle back around. So my co-host Mike Payton is up again. The Phoenix Suns are up, and the Suns, they're going to have their renaissance pretty soon, but not yet. They're still in the process of bottoming out. It's actually only going to get worse from here.
I think by the end of this draft, we're going to totally change their fortunes. Because I'll tell you what, I'm not going to take Dragon Bender right now. That's for that's for damn sure. So I'm pretty sure that we're not going to take Marquise Chris later on. So I am going to go with this was kind of hard, because I was thinking about Fred VanVleet here, but I was thinking also that might be a little bit too high. Plus he has Eric Bledsoe, and he being Devin Booker has Eric Bledsoe back with him. So the backcourt's fine, but I think another scorer would certainly help. So Brandon Ingram, obviously, I think is the best route to go here. And you can maybe set him up with something else in the front court later. But Brandon Ingram, I mean, is a game changer on this team if he's able to kind of get to what we know Brandon Ingram is faster than he originally did. But so Devin Booker, Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Ingram, and then you've got you know, TJ Warren is also on this team as well. So this is a pretty interesting team all of a sudden. And if we can get him a big man later, I think we're looking at a team that could make it to the playoffs relatively soon, and maybe beat the Bucks somewhere down the line. But yeah, Brandon Ingram is what I'm going with.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram, it's kind of weird how he's kind of been, I don't want to say he's been forgotten by everybody, but he had all this fanfare at Duke where he was projected to be a possible number one overall pick. I don't want to say he underwhelms at Duke, but he kind of coasts through it. He goes to the Lakers. He's projected to be one of the immediate impact guys. He really isn't that. And then towards the end of his Lakers career, he has this a blood clot scare. It's similar to the thing that ruined the Chris Bosh. So he's gone through some trials and tribulations, but he just quietly goes to New Orleans in the Anthony Davis trade, and he turns himself into an all-star caliber scorer. He's the leading scorer in this draft class, this entire draft class, by far. He has the best scoring average. So, yeah, for him to drop all the way to four, man, this is a really, really nice draft class.
It's strange to me that he only has one all-star game. And that's it. Like, I feel like, you know, he should have, you know, this is a guy who's averaging 24 a game last year. I mean, I know he missed some time due to injury and everything, but I don't know. I just feel like this guy should be, have more respect than he does.
Right. Because the problem is that there's this big Zion sized attention magnet on in his own locker room, taking up all the spotlight. No one really thinks about Brandon Ingram when you think about the Pelicans. You think about Zion Williamson.
Hey, Mike, since we've got you here, do you think Zion Williamson is good, or I don't get it. What are we waiting on with this guy?
Like, I think when healthy, he's one of the best young players in the league. That's the thing. When healthy, there's always something that takes him out of the game. He's quick on his feet, especially with those when he's going for a putback. Like that second jump is like no other. Of course, he's athletic. He's fast for his size. He's a better passer than a lot of people give him credit for. I think Zion's special, but he has to stay healthy. I'm interested in seeing how he kind of bounces back from last year and all the offseason drama this year.
Part of me thinks like, and it's a stupid thought because it doesn't mean anything, but part of me it almost feels like he's just marketable, and that's why he's around, you know, because like he's like a young Sean Kemp or something. Like, he's a big body dude who you don't usually see that kind of thing in the NBA anymore. But I don't know. It's just I feel the urge to think he's not good. That's my first urge with him. I don't really know why, but
yeah, it's a small sample size. I want to see if he hits that league minimum of 65 games to be considered a quote unquote all NBA player, or reach, or any of the like end of season awards. I want to see if a lot of guys hit that 65 game mark this year.
Fair enough.
Here's the only thing I want to see with Zion Williamson. I agree with you, Mike. He is an absolute dominant, possibly top 10 player in the league when he's healthy. But I need to see him. I have watched the Minnesota Timberwolves repeatedly go into the play-in without him. He has not even come close to being healthy enough for playoff time. And the Timberwolves are getting there without – or not the Timberwolves, the Pelicans.
Pelicans,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, the Pelicans have never gone into the playoffs with Zion on their roster. That needs to happen, because that's really frustrating for me, because there's nothing more than I hate than watching a playoff team and their best player, their franchise guy, is never healthy enough to actually participate.
Well, speaking of the Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking. That's why the Timberwolves on my mind, because they're up next.
You're
that
up, Mike.
That was a good lob right there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Call me Derek Fisher. I'm just lobbing him up.
Timberwolves had a number 5 pick. They originally went with Chris Dunn. I'm not going to go that route, but I will select at a similar position. Seeing how Jamal Murray was already picked, You see Ben Simmons is still on the board. I have a feeling he's going to drop a little bit more just because of, I guess, even when Ben Simmons entered the league, he still had a willingness to drive to the rim, to just be a little bit more offensively minded. But I'm going to go with a guy you don't have to worry about shooting. And defensively, his length is there, especially for a guard. He's been an all-star. I'm going to go with DeJounte Murray.
Ooh.
Pair him with Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Zach LaVine, all these young guys. I know it's only one ball, but I think they will be really, really exciting to watch if you pair DeJounte Murray with that group.
This Timberwolves team was the very last attempt at the Andrew Wiggins, Zach LaVine, Karl Anthony Towns trio. I want to say Zach LaVine tore his ACL like halfway through the season, but it just wasn't working out anyway, and that's when they pivoted over to Jimmy Butler. But yeah, I'm actually interested because DeJounte Murray was so damn good. And it's not like anyone even really knew DeJounte Murray because he played up in Washington. Like not many people even saw him play. So and he goes to the Spurs and he's good fairly quickly. So I'm right with you. I'm loving his fit on this Timberwolves roster. And I'm actually wondering if that might change their thought process going into the next offseason. Like, would they see a big four instead of a big three and maybe keep it together instead of condensing everybody and going for the quick fix and Jimmy Butler?
Yeah, and who knows if this happens that Anthony Edwards even gets drafted number one.
Right.
You got a feeling that changes the entire trajectory of like that season as well.
All right, so I'm up next with the number six pick representing the New Orleans Pelicans. And this was the season where they have Anthony Davis. I believe this is the season where they traded for DeMarcus Cousins as well. So really the only thing this team doesn't need is a big man because they've got Davis. I know Cousins is not going to stick around. I'm not even counting him. Drew Holiday is still on this team though, right? Or yeah, he is. Okay. There's like 35 players that play for New Orleans this season. All right. So who do I, damn it. And the best player on my board by far is a freaking center. All right. So I'm going to go with the number two player on my board. He kind of overlaps a little bit with Drew Holiday. I don't care because I know Holiday is not long for this franchise anyway, and that is going to be out of Wichita State. I am going to take a player that went undrafted originally. I'm going to select Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet has always – if you just look at Fred VanVleet, he doesn't even look like an NBA player, right? I don't even think he's 6 feet tall. Not overly athletic, kind of stocky, doesn't move around the floor like an Isaiah Thomas too, or like a Muggsy Bogues or any of those like quintessential little guys that just move at a faster speed than everybody else. But Fred VanVleet just gets it done. I don't know how he's as good defensively as he is, as short as he is, but he's a good quality defender. He's a clutch shooter. I don't think I will ever forget that ridiculous run he had in Toronto during their postseason in 2019, where he just couldn't miss for three playoff rounds. He was a big part of the reason they won the championship. And then when Kawhi Leonard moves on and VanVleet is given more responsibility, he makes the All-Star team. Like, he's just a really, really, really good player, one of the best undrafted players of all time, and I don't think there's a question there. How does he fit with New Orleans? I think he fits in seamlessly. I think he could be a career guy in New Orleans because once they move on from Anthony Davis, they're going to move on from Drew Holiday, and it's basically going to be his team, and he's going to be bringing along Zion and whoever they – I guess in this scenario, they'd be getting Pascal Siakam. You'd be reuniting them in New Orleans now. It's kind of interesting. But – yeah, I love Fred VanVleet as a player. I know he's not the most efficient shooter creating his own shot, but I think his entire career has been such a remarkable story. that no one, I don't think it ever gets paid enough attention on, you know, all the odds he's overcome to have the career that he's had.
All right.
Well, I like that pick.
Thank you. All right. Circling back around, and now we get into crazy town, because pretty much every pick from here on out either was traded before or right after the draft. So the number 7 pick originally belonged to the New York Knicks a long time ago, but in the three-way deal that sent Carmelo Anthony to New York, the Denver Nuggets poached this pick from the Knicks, so the Nuggets are on the clock. Selecting for the Nuggets will be my co-host, Mike Payton.
All right. Here's what I'm thinking. So the Nuggets were 11th in defensive efficiency last year. So, and they won the championship, obviously. So why not add another great defensive piece? And I'm going to add a guy that is incredibly controversial. And we've already sort of talked about him a little bit earlier on the show. I personally think this guy gets a lot more hate than he should get. And I also think that he handled that publicly in the worst possible way he could have. I am going to select Ben Simmons to the Denver Nuggets team. This is a two-time all-defensive player first team. I mean, he's a very good, you can't deny his defensive ability. Shooting, that's a bit of a problem. Maybe we work on that as things go along. But I think having him and Jokic down the line, I think that makes that team really interesting. And I think they could win a championship with Ben Simmons just as much as they could win a championship with Michael Porter Jr. I think that Ben Simmons actually might be a better fit here, especially I don't know, because Michael Porter Jr. was hitting a lot of bricks too. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I think defensively he's a better player than MPJ. And I just really like this addition. I think it melds really well. And I think with Michael Malone, I think you have a little bit stronger coaching situation, whereas Philly kind of changed on him a couple times. And there's also, you know, there was just a lot happening in Philly there's a lot more pressure in Philly as well, whereas there's not as much in Denver at this time. So I think it's just going to work out better for him with the Nuggets.
I would love this pick so much more if the guy he was replacing wasn't Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
There's just no good pick here from the Nuggets' perspective, simply because the guy that was the number 2 guy on their championship team has long since been off the board. So, but yeah, look, for the angle of Ben Simmons, I think he's kind of been snake bit in that he's gone to places where the media scrutiny is at the higher levels than most teams. He's gone to the Sixers. He's gone to New York to play for the Brooklyn Nets. Look, I think if he goes to Denver and things don't work, some guys can handle that media pressure. Some guys can thrive on it. Ben Simmons, clearly not one of those guys. And I think if he goes to a smaller market like Denver or Utah or just about anywhere where the spotlight isn't going to be on him all the time, I think mentally he might have coped better with his struggles and the things that have gone against him over his career. Because look, I think we can all agree his first few seasons in the league, one hell of a talent, legitimate two-way guy, easily the best passer in this entire draft class at 6'9", 6'10", whatever he is. He looked like he was going to be a truly unique player in the NBA, like this Swiss Army knife, and then just it all collapsed on him. He suffered some injuries, but he also suffered a lot of mental trauma, and it was just more than he could handle. And I don't hate the guy. I'm rooting for him to resurrect his career in Brooklyn, but it's just the way things have gone downhill for him at such a young age is kind of shocking to me.
Mike, your thoughts on Ben Simmons and how all this has gone down?
I like Ben Simmons. Well, this pick, I like Ben Simmons in Denver.
Yeah.
I think the combination of playmaking between him and Jokic is really intriguing. Yeah. But as far as just him overall and how he's how his career's kind of wound up. I think this is going to be a big year for him. I think he's going into this year wanting to prove a lot of people wrong. He looked good. Granted, it's just preseason. I keep saying that. He looked good in the Nets preseason opener. But I think it is, definitely is unfortunate because this is a guy who, when you put him next to Joel Embiid, that lineup just put shooters around those two guys, and you could just think of like what they would have been able to accomplish together. Everyone always points to how he didn't take the layup over Trae Young in that playoff game. And it's a mistake. Guys make mistakes. But it's what you do, how you learn from that moment and kind of go forward is kind of what makes you who you are. Like, the perfect example I think about is like how LeBron performed in the 2011 finals against the Dallas Mavericks. That was arguably the worst moment of his career. But he was able to use that moment, learn from it, and then he's been a different player ever since. Not saying that Ben Simmons is LeBron or just making that comparison at all, but I think if he's able to kind of get over these mental hurdles that he unfortunately has from time to time, I think he'll be able to kind of thrive in this new situation.
You know, I think like when we look at that layup that he didn't take, and I know that it's really easy to from the couch or wherever to say that, that you do that, but like the game is so fast. And I've played basketball. I don't know if you guys have played basketball, but it's fast, man. And it can be hard sometimes to make the right decision every single time. Like, it's just, you can't possibly do it. You're going to be wrong sometimes.
Yeah. But like, look, if he comes back and he's the same exact player the very next season, you know, same positives, same deficiencies, whatever, no one even talks about that moment today. It's the fact that it was one thing, but it was allowed to snowball. It kept turning into this negative snowball that just, like, he was just never the same guy after that. And it's just so weird how one play, like, just because of all the scrutiny that he, and he kind of got thrown under the bus by his coach and his teammates, but yeah, like how he reacted to it was just so foreign to how we usually expect our athletes to react, which is to have the stiff upper lip and come back and work harder. And he just went the complete opposite way with it, where he just couldn't handle all the negativity. And I'm not saying that that makes him softer. It just makes him human. He's a different type of guy than the usual, you know, big ego NBA superstars that we've had, where we expect them to be tough and take the criticism. And some guys just can't handle it. And look, he's had physical injuries too. I'm not saying it's all in his head, but I don't know. I'm rooting for him to come back though.
All right. The number 8 pick in this draft originally belonged to Sacramento Kings, but they kind of very wisely traded it for the 13th. They traded it down with the Phoenix Suns for the 13th, 28th picks and the rights to
Bogdan Bogdanovich, which just Bogdan alone would have made this a trade a win.
But yeah, they pulled a pretty shrewd deal here for with Phoenix. So Phoenix is back on the board at number 8. Mike, remind me who they picked at number 4.
Yeah, I think they picked Brandon Ingram, right?
That's correct. Yeah, Brandon Ingram.
So we've got Brandon Ingram here. We've got Devin Booker already. So we've actually, we can put together a nice little roster going forward here, which will probably kill their chances of getting DeAndre Ayton down the road, but I think we can sacrifice that.
And that'll probably kill the whole Suns trading DeAndre Ayton to the Pistons thing as well.
The thing that never happened. Yeah.
Yeah, so with, like you said, Devin Booker already on the squad. You got a lot of guards. And if you recall, they went with Marquise Chris their original pick. So they're looking for a backup. And when you got a guy like Devin Booker and you got Brandon Ingram already on the team, you got your scoring right there, I think you need a big. So I'm going to go with Domantas Sabonis.
Thank you.
Perfect.
We know what he's become in Sacramento. All-star caliber player. He can score inside. He has ability to hit the outside shot. Phenomenal playmaker. I think he fits in perfectly with this Phoenix team. I know they had, let me check, a 15-year veteran in Tyson Chandler already on the squad at center. Who else did they have? They had Dragon Bender. Well, no, they didn't.
No, they not anymore. They don't.
No, they do not. Not anymore. They had Jared Dudley, who played the four, but not really a four. So I think he fits in perfectly. Alex Len was on the team as well, but we've seen what Sabonis has become, and I think he fits in perfectly with this team.
Yeah, it's crazy. PJ Tucker was ever played for a team this bad. You don't think of PJ Tucker playing for horrible teams.
Yeah, the Suns were arguably one of the two or three worst teams in the league the season after this, and Tucker was there the whole time. But yeah, they definitely won't be, in my opinion. Not with Ingram and Sabonis. And
it's another crazy story. Like, a lot of these guys in this draft class started slow and then just had to find a better situation. Yeah. Domantas was definitely one. He's originally traded.
He went to OKC. See.
Yeah, that's right. He goes to OKC, where they basically park him in a corner and try to make him into a corner three-point shooter while everyone stands around and watches Russell Westbrook dominate the ball. And it gives off the impression, not him, but Oladipo was like, they treated Oladipo like that too. And yeah, it gave everyone else the impression that those were just a couple of guys and they weren't good enough to play with Russell Westbrook. And then they go to Indiana and both of them become all-stars. In Sabonis's case, I think, and especially everybody knew, everyone remembers watching Arvydas Sabonis and how talented, how gifted he was. Domantas, not quite as big or as athletic as his father was in his prime, but he's got a lot of those same passing skills, those same ball skills. Those definitely got handed down. And I don't think he's a dominant, like, superstar by any means. He's probably a fringe all-star for 10 to 15 years, but that's a hell of a player still. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't forget this team also had former Piston Brandon Knight as well.
he comes back to Detroit after they let him go for like half a season. We get to say goodbye to him.
Got a little Sabonis fun fact here. His dad is the only guy in our redrafts to be drafted twice.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We did.
Little fun fact, because
because he was eligible twice. Yeah,
eligible twice.
Wow.
But yeah, Domantas is still one of my favorite big men in the entire league, just because he plays the game in a very unique way, I think.
All right, so I'm up, and once again, Carmelo Anthony, the Carmelo Anthony trade rears its ugly head. This pick originally belonged to Denver, but in the three-way deal that sent Carmelo to New York, it got rerouted to Toronto. And let me take a quick look at Toronto's roster going into this season. They were a very good team. This was one of Dwayne Casey's better teams. They've got, let's see. They did get PJ Tucker towards the end of the season. They got Kyle Lowry. They've got DeMar DeRozan. They've got Damari Carroll stealing money, but that's fine. They got Serge Ibaka. Yeah, this is a really, really good team. And this team is going to get obliterated by LeBron James like all Raptors teams did in the 2010s. All right, but what does this team really need? Elite offensive team, not so great defensively, and there are plenty of good defenders available. But do I want to reach? You know what? I'm going to reach for some backcourt help. I'm going to select out of Virginia, the Raptors select Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon, he's a guy that's moved around a lot, but the thing is, he keeps moving around to good teams. Teams that are good want Malcolm Brogdon. They want him for a reason, is because he's a combo guard, but he's not one that needs to dominate the ball. He is a fantastic spot-up shooter. He plays pretty good defense. He just does everything that you need from a role player on a good team. And there's really not much else to say about Malcolm Brogdon other than how does he fit in Toronto? I think he actually fits very well, like in a three-guard rotation with DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. I'm not sure who their backup was
Oh, yeah. It was Fred VanVleet, but VanVleet wasn't VanVleet yet, and he's also off the board. So, yeah. No, I'm actually liking this going forward. I don't think Corey Joseph missing minutes is going to hurt them tremendously. And Brogdon was actually very good right away. So he could actually have an impact for them in the playoffs. I do not think he's going to get them past LeBron James. That's not happening.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I like Malcolm Brogdon. I was thinking he was going to fall. I had him somewhere else, but it is what it is. The Milwaukee Bucks are now on the board, and we will not be selecting Megathon, which Pistons fans, you guys were wrong for that one. He came in, he hit a three, and everybody's like, this dude, he's it. This is what we've been waiting for.
Hey, man, he hit a three. He got a bloody mouth, and everybody assumed he got a tooth knocked out when he didn't because it was just covered up by a bloody lip.
Oh, jeez. I don't think Thon Maker is going to go today, but we'll see. There's still time. I'm going to go ahead, since you took Brogdon already, I'm going to go ahead and select a shooting guard because I think that's what the Bucks needed anyways. That's what they selected when they took Brogdon initially. I'm going to go with a guy who I think is a little bit better, at least on the scoring end, a guy who's pretty quiet. Like you never seem to really hear about Buddy Hield, but like he's a great player. And that's another guy that I think that he should get a little bit more light shined on him. But he played in Sacramento and Indiana. And those are the teams that people just kind of don't think about. But I think Buddy Hield, Chris Middleton, and Giannis all together is a pretty formidable duo, especially on the scoring end of things. I'd be really interested to see how this trio rather would work out.
I like that.
Go ahead.
Now, and it's funny because I was going to take him with my number 11 pick for the Thunder. That I was not in my head the entire time you were saying you were going to pick a shooting guard because I already knew where you were going with.
Yeah, he's the best one left on the board. Yeah.
Yeah, we're basically replacing Malcolm Brogdon on the Bucks with Buddy Hield, which that can go one of two ways because Hield, shooter in all caps, shooter. Excellent volume. Not only does he shoot a lot, I mean, he makes a lot. He's a very efficient outside shooter. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't really do much else other than shoot, but damn it, he's really good at that. I think there's a kind of a reason why every time he came up in trade talks, like people were, teams around the league were, do we really want this guy for $20 million that just wants to shoot all the time? But I think he proved himself when he went to Indiana and he did the same thing and he was really efficient at it. Like eventually someone's going to give Buddy Hield a chance to play for a really good team. And I'm excited to see how it works out because I think he's one of those guys that you put him on a really good roster where he's not going to draw a whole lot of attention. I think he could be like a J.R. Smith type where, you know, he can explode for five or six threes in a playoff game and everyone's scratching their heads. Why didn't we get that guy?
Of course, Buddy would probably have a better concept of, you know, the clock and stuff.
Well, that goes without saying. All right. So up next, the number 11 pick originally belonged to the Orlando Magic, but in the deal that sent this was a hell of a deal for Oklahoma City, even though they didn't realize it. In the deal that sent Serge Ibaka to Orlando, the Magic sent this pick plus Victor Oladipo to Oklahoma City. And yeah, this pick also, as we said before, wound up being Domantas Sabonis. So that's two All-Stars that didn't actually make the All-Star team for Oklahoma City. All right, so the number 11 pick, as I've made very clear, we're going into the Russell Westbrook solo act in Oklahoma City, where he is basically going to be the only one allowed to touch the ball. So, Mike Curtis, do you have anybody who would be a great fit for this type of team?
Absolutely. Okay. It's funny because I was going to go Buddy Hield had he not been selected, just because I think Russ needed another guy out there where he could get the ball to and kind of space the floor. But looking at this roster, man, so you got Russ, you got Oladipo, who was just traded there, so they're expected to be the backcourt of this team. You also got a known shooter, Anthony Morrow. You got Doug McDermott. You got Jeremy Grant, former Piston. And you got a couple of centers in Steven Adams, Enes Kanter, Taj Gibson. Nick Collison's still on this team. But I'm going to go with another big guy since they originally chose Sabonis. And I'm going to go with Ivica Zubac.
That's a good pick. I had him on my board. I was wondering when he was going to go. I like that a lot here because, again, he's never going to touch the ball. So
yeah,
it works out perfectly.
I really like Zubac when he was in L.A. Well, still in L.A. when he was with the Lakers. And I thought that was probably one of the worst decisions that they could have made was just by getting rid of him.
They gave him away.
They literally gave him away. And now he's thriving as one of the Clippers' primary big guys. So I like Zubac here in OKC. Granted, I don't think he'll pan out as well as Steven Adams did. He's one of the best rebounders in the league. But as a backup, I think that's a pretty good fit there.
Yeah, I think there's enough. Look, I agree with you. There's no way that he's unseating Steven Adams, and I don't think there's any way they can play together either. But down the road, when they do move on from Steven Adams, I think there's a good chance that that Zubac is still on Oklahoma City to this day. Because there's nothing wrong with the pick itself. Zubac, very underrated player. I think he's a good fit down the road. Just this roster is kind of wacky anyway. There's so much talent there, and we didn't really know about half of it until they moved on to other destinations. All right. So number 12, I am up representing the Atlanta Hawks. This pick originally belonged to the Utah Jazz, but it got flipped to the Hawks in a three-way deal. If I don't know if either of you guys remember this. This was a pretty fun deal. It sent Jeff Teague to Indiana and George Hill to Utah.
That one slid right by me.
Well, yeah, this was kind of the Atlanta blowing up their mid-2010s team that won a lot of games and kept failing in the playoffs. All right, so Atlanta, I don't want to say they're – yeah, you know what? I will say it. They're about to hit the skids and go into a rebuild. And eventually it's going to land them Trae Young, Jason Collins, and a handful of other top 10 picks. So right now I'm kind of working with a blank canvas. Who do I think is going to make Trae Young look good down the road? You know what? I think I've got a good one. I'm going to give the Hawks something that they seem to be afraid of getting, and that's going to be a defensive stopper. Out of Texas A&M, the Atlanta Hawks select Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso, now you can say he's not a guy that's going to space the floor for Trae Young, and to an extent that's true, but Alex has evolved himself into a league average three-point shooter. He's not a guy you can just cheat off of anymore. And look, everyone made fun of the guy when he started out in LA. He had kind of this goofy look to him, and he comes out, he plays a key role on the championship team. Look, you can poke fun at the Mickey Mouse championship in the bubble all you want, but that was a legitimate NBA championship, no matter how you want to slice it. And he was a major part of that, and no one still gave him credit for it. He had to go to Chicago and prove himself all over again on a bad team, and prove that he wasn't just benefiting off of LeBron and AD. And he was first team all defense this past season. Alex Caruso is a very good basketball player, and I think it's time people start accepting that for what it is. How does he fit on the Hawks? He gives them the defensive stopper, all due respect to DeJounte Murray, that they've never had in the entire Trae Young era. They have always been a very poor defensive team that gets broken down on the perimeter. And look, I don't think Caruso's going to solve all that, especially not in today's era of constant switching. But I think he's 100 times better than anyone that they've ever had on the perimeter. So I'm actually very bullish on this pick going forward, especially because he won't improve them by himself and take them out of the running for a guy like Trae Young down the road.
All right. I've got the Sacramento Kings.
Yep.
And this is like a super weird team. Boogie's still here. And there's Jordan Farmar. And you got Tyreke Evans and Aaron Aflalo and Matt Barnes and Ty Lawson. It's like a weird – it's a weird team. It just feels
– yeah. You've got Boogie, but keep in mind he wants out.
He wants out. He's been wanting out. So the Ben McLemore experiment is not working out already. We know this, and it's not going to work out, at least not like how anybody wanted to, especially when you take a player that high. So I'm going to go ahead and select a shooting guard for this team. Nobody I put on this team is going to help them though. I mean, this is a long, long process and they're just now coming out of it. Like, you know, after this past season. So I'm going to select Caris LeVert with this pick. And I think that LeVert is a guy that you can sort of kind of build around at, until you get better, until you get De'Aaron Fox, until you get Keegan Murray and some of these other guys that are on that team now, Sabonis being one of them. I still don't know that Halliburton Sabonis trade, like how that worked out perfectly for everybody. It seems like you don't see trades like that anymore where both teams just get so much better because of a trade. But I thought it was crazy at the time that they would trade Halliburton. But anyways,
The Kings have gotten better. We're still, the jury is still out on the Pacers.
I think they're a playoff team, man. I really do.
Really? You're that bullish on Indiana this year?
I look at that division and I just think that there's a potential. I don't believe in the Pistons. Like, I love the Pistons. I hope they make the play-in. I don't believe in the Bulls. I feel like that team is any day now is going to be hitting the rebuild switch. I mean, the Bucks are the only team really that I believe in this entire division. So I think the Pacers have a shot.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of things that don't work out, I give you the Dwayne Wade era of the Chicago Bulls, as represented by our guest, Mike Curtis, who will make one final selection today. The Chicago Bulls. Oh, they've got Jimmy Butler, and And yeah. And Nikola Mirotic, who can play a little bit too, and Bobby Portis, who will prove himself on a good team, which this team is not.
So I'm sure you're looking at the same roster I am, Mike. So who do you got for us?
Yeah, this roster was a real piece of work. when you look at Rondo, Wade, Jimmy on the same team, it never really panned out. They reached the playoffs that year, well, the following year, as the eighth seed. And they originally selected Denzel Valentine. I'm not going to go in that direction this time. Shout out to Michigan State, but not going that way. I was going to go with Caris. So thank you again, Mike, for taking my pick.
Oh, man. Hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do around here.
Yeah.
You got to step up.
You guys have really been on the same page this whole draft.
That's because we both named Mike.
We have.
Mike's think alike.
Mike squared. Mike and Mike. But no, I'm going to go with a guy who's made a decent career of himself. He played with the Lakers last season. Malik Beasley.
Okay.
I think he definitely could add perimeter shooting to that team, which they didn't have a lot of when you got Wade, Rondo, and Jimmy Butler in the same lineup. I think he complements his team well. I think he does what Denzel Valentine probably should have done a little bit more of. I think he wanted to be more than just a shooter. And sometimes your specialty is what you should kind of stick to. So I'm going to go Malik Beasley.
Yeah, Malik's made a lot of money in the NBA already. He's, I don't think he has a major role on this current Lakers team. But look, he's a guy that – look, if you take him lightly, he can bury you with three-pointers. I mean, he's a legitimate born shooter. He's kind of like a poor man's version of Buddy Hield. It doesn't move quite as well without the ball, but he's got that same I'm always going to make the next one mentality. How he fits on the Bulls, I don't think it matters because they're going to blow this team up anyway. And I think Beasley's a really nice piece going forward, which
I'm sorry, but they didn't have that with Denzel Valentine, who's he kind of become a meme at this point.
Was this the year that Bobby Portis punched Miritich?
Yes, yes, it was. Yeah. I believe it was. You're right. Yeah.
God, you remembered that and I didn't. But yeah, that kind of made everything uncomfortable. And we haven't seen Miritich since. All right. So the Denver Nuggets, I'm bringing up the rear here in this draft. This pick originally belonged to the Houston Rockets, but they traded it for Ty Lawson. And that was a hell of a deal for Denver because, as I recall, Ty Lawson kind of disappeared when he went to Houston. All right, so what do we have so far? We've got Nikola Jokic. We've got Ben Simmons, I believe, from the seventh pick.
So we've got that interesting duo.
And look, I'm right with you guys. I think that would be fascinating if Simmons has good fortune in Denver. So, all right. I know I can't replace Jamal Murray, but here's a guy I can replace, I think, Bruce Brown. Bruce Brown, not available in this draft class, but there's a player very similar to Bruce Brown that's still on the board, and I'm going to take him. He went to Oregon State, just like his daddy. The Denver Nuggets select Gary Payton Jr.
My cousin. My cousin now, Gary. I really wanted this for the Pistons. I was hoping he would fall, but all right, go on.
I think just looking at the board, I think he's by far the best fit for this team. I Gary Payton Jr., much like Bruce Brown, adds toughness wherever he goes. He bounces around the league a lot because his offense isn't great, not the best shooter. A very athletic player, finishes around the rim, but outside of that, doesn't do much outside of the paint. So he really needed to go to Golden State and win a championship before he gained that kind of respect. And I think he can kind of do the same thing with Denver if he sticks around, which I think he would, because I think Mike Malone is exactly the type of coach that would keep a guy like Gary Payton Jr. around. All right, so that concludes the top 15 picks of our 2016 redraft, but as is our tradition, if you've been listening to us, if you've been listening to any of our redrafts where the Pistons have not selected, we always do this. We add a fictional pick immediately after, and we select the best fit from the remaining draft pool for the Detroit Pistons, which, again, Henry Ellenson was, what, the 17th pick?
18th
pick. So we're really only moving the Pistons up two picks. So this is not that far-fetched. The Pistons is probably the most positive vibes that they had the entire 2010s, coming off of a first round sweep at the hands of the Cavs, which we all convinced ourselves was a lot closer than it appeared. And in reality, of course, it wasn't. All right. So, you know, Pistons are pretty much bringing the band back for 16-17. It's not going to go very well. What are their needs going into this point? I would say a power forward, maybe. Even though they have Tobias Harris, they kind of lack size there. They lack some perimeter defense. They very badly need a backup point guard because anytime Reggie Jackson got hurt, Ish Smith, who was a great backup, was not capable of starting. All right, so anyone have a name in mind?
I do, but let's let Mike go first since he's our guest.
I agree.
All right, y'all put me on the spot.
Yeah.
And since they went two picks later, we're only picking two picks earlier, and they went with the big, I'm going to go with the big as well.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. That's interesting. I was going to, since they had Drummond.
Yeah, they already had Drummond.
That's, I was going to go with Taurean Prince.
Okay, so this time my co-host and I are on the same page.
Hey, we did.
If only for the name, I was going to go with Taurean Prince because, we all know that Stanley Johnson is not going to be the wing help that the Pistons thought that they were getting, and they do have a need at small forward. So it's either going to be Taurean Prince or Dorian Finney-Smith.
And to me, it's kind of like 6-1. They're very similar players. So I was going to go with Taurean Prince just for the name. But look, for Jakob Poeltl, I am kind of – ashamed that he didn't get picked, because he's my 10th rated prospect on this board. He is by far the highest rated prospect I think that I've ever seen on my board that's gone undrafted. I know traditional centers are kind of going out of style if they haven't already been. But Jakob Poeltl's made a hell of a career. I mean, he was included in the Kawhi Leonard for DeMar DeRozan deal. That's how much the Spurs thought of the guy. Yeah. So, yeah, he did deserve at the very least a shout out. So I'm actually in a way very glad that you picked him.
Yeah, I know Drummond's there. He's a star. Yeah. He's still in his prime, but I think Poeltl would have been a really good backup.
Yeah. And I think they have they signed Boban going into this next season, didn't they? Or was that the season?
Yeah, Boban's on this roster. Okay, Aaron Baines.
Yep. So they had Aaron Baines. This was the last year Aaron Baines contract, and they loaded themselves up with centers anyway. But look, obviously, if you take Poeltl for the Pistons here, they're not going out and signing, you know, Boban, because that was a free agency signing, I believe. But yeah, with Aaron Baines just having one more year left on his deal. Yeah, I think this would actually encourage the Pistons in a way to move on from Andre Faster if they had a young, very productive center like Jakob Poeltl. So this, in a sneaky way, picking Poeltl for the Pistons might actually really change things going forward. Like, they might actually move Andre while he's still at value.
Interesting.
Looks like Mike's not buying it.
No, I just we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and Mike, I would love to get your thoughts on it. Like, I don't understand why this team ever wanted to move on from Andre Drummond. Like, a guy with that rebounding ability and the things that he could do defensively, like, it just made no sense to me that this team would, like, and I know Pistons fans are like probably screaming at me right now in their car, and I know they were a lot of Pistons fans, Pistons Twitter, a special group of people. I guess we're part of it now. they all wanted Drummond gone. Like, you heard it all the time. And I just could never understand what the problem was with him.
Mike, do you want to take this? Because I've already been through this with him.
Yeah, you go ahead, Mike.
I think it's just as simple as I think that leadership and that ownership kind of saw the way things were trending with the traditional big man, and it wasn't something that was valued at that particular time. I think when you got a guy that can go out and get you 20 rebounds in his sleep, like, that's a valuable asset that's rare, and you don't come by it pretty often. And ever since he left Detroit, we see he went to LA, he went to Brooklyn, he went to Cleveland, he's currently with the Bulls. Like, he just hasn't been that same Andre Drummond that became an all-star here or that had his best years here in Detroit. I think that's pretty much my take on it as far as, like, just that traditional center. And I didn't think that was the direction that the Pistons wanted to go anymore.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fair. The game has changed a lot, even in the last just a few years. So, and I guess to me,
it wasn't Andre Drummond they traded; it was Andre Drummond's contract, where they decided, look, we're not going to be paying him $25-30 million or whatever he wanted. And it was, look, if you want that money, good luck to you. But we're allocating our salary cap space elsewhere. I think if Andre Drummond was making $5 million or the mid-level, or I don't think that they would have been as desperate to move on from him.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for today's episode. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. And please take this time to, you know, tell everybody where they can find your work and where they can find you on social media and all that stuff.
No, I appreciate you guys for having me. This is really fun. I've never did like a mock draft before or a redraft, so... hopefully my picks weren't too atrocious. Hopefully I don't get killed in the comments. But this is really fun. And everyone can find me at the Detroit News. All of my work is there, DetroitNews.com. I'm on Twitter at Mike A. Curtis 2, well, formerly known as Twitter, currently X. Mike A. Curtis 2. Just appreciate all the support.
Absolutely. And before we got out of here, You ran an article in the Detroit News on our Isaiah Thomas, or Corey did. I can't remember who actually wound up running it, but you helped facilitate it. regardless. And we definitely appreciate that because it got a lot of eyes on our show. And yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah. I wasn't the one that wrote it, so I don't want to take credit for it. I think it was, Corey wrote it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Corey now that I remember. But I know that you said that you would pass it on because I think you were out of town at the time. But
yeah.
But yeah, thank you for that, and thanks for coming on. And we will see you guys next week. We don't know what our topic is quite yet, but we will see you guys next week. We'll let you know.